So my name is Nicola Osborne. I'm based at Edina at the University of Edinburgh, and this is a collaboration with my colleague Louise over here, also from the University of Edinburgh. So we're going to be talking about some work we've been doing at the University of Edinburgh around use of social media by students primarily, but also some work with some staff as well, and particularly talking about identities in transition, so people coming into and out of university. It's a quick overview. We'll explain the project a bit. We will talk about what transitions are and why this stuff is relevant, and talked a little bit to the kind of research findings we've got. So the scale research is such you will spot quite quickly that we are still in the process of analysing this stuff. So this is like a snapshot of some of our data. So the project itself was called Managing Your Digital Footprint. It was a year-long campaign across the whole of the university, so reaching out to staff, students, across different schools, across support units, whole thing. To raise awareness of social media and how it might be used in relation to what they're doing at university in various different ways. And alongside that, in parallel, we had a research project, so using sort of the survey data from our campaign, but also undertaking things like ethnographic tracing of some of our students and how they use social media. So we have an inordinately large quantity of data to analyse, and we're still just starting to kind of dig into it. But there's some interesting stuff there. So we defined a digital footprint as the data you leave behind when you go online, what you said, what's said about you, where you've been, images that you've taken, images that you're in, some images, social media profiles, the whole range of stuff. So including social media is a major prominent factor, but not exclusive to social media. And we sort of asked, well, what their digital footprint looks like to their friends, to their future employers, to the whole kind of range of audiences they might have. You can find out loads more about the project. You can see quite a fun video that was made for us about it as well, over on our website just there. And these slides will also be available afterwards, by the way. So this is kind of the timeline of it. The campaign started September 2014 and ran until sort of October 2015. It's actually now become a mainstream service. So we were running lots of workshops. Ooh. And support service type things during that year. And we've carried those on now to kind of mainstream service, so it's carrying on well beyond this timeline. But we're still kind of in the tail end of the research ground at the moment and looking at kind of implications of teaching and learning, some of which we'll talk about just here. So the campaign initially came about because basically Louise and I were being asked a lot of the time to run social media training sessions and give advice on social media, and there was a clear kind of gap around the provision of training and support in that area. There was lots of great stuff going on, but it was all disjointed, so we wanted to bring it all together. Louise's brainchild, I have to say, genius brainchild. So we wanted to raise awareness from students and also some awareness of staff, but students were our focus. And we wanted it to be highly collaborative. So we're talking about reaching out to 32,000 students, including our students who are not on campus, which is an interesting one from the point of view of social media, which is quite important to how they build up their identity and their community. But also kind of interesting in terms of providing training and support. So our activities included workshops, presentations, competitions. There's a find a foot competition. So I think some surveys that have gone, some flyers that have gone around, and a little kind of foot logo that we used. We kind of just had those feet all around campus to remind people about the campaign and to get them interested and hopefully sufficiently confused to go and look it up, if you see what I mean, like interested and why is there a footprint on the wall there. There's lots of opportunity to share best practice and try to promote good practices as part of the year, but we were trying to sort of also find out what else we needed to do. So in terms of what happened during that year, we reached a lot of people. So we had over 1,400 responses to our survey. The survey went out to... we had... the survey went out to a third of our students, a representative sample, our students as well, so that third covered all different types of learners at all different levels across all of the different schools. So we had 1,400 responses, again pretty well mapped actually to kind of what we have in the student population. We had loads of people visiting the website and YouTube and engaging with us on Twitter, which was great. We ran loads of workshops, and by we, again, primarily Louise, over 1,000 participants came along to different workshops around it, so lots of interest, lots of engagement. Lots of presentations to staff to explain what was going on as well, because the sort of easy way of getting staff interested was to sort of start with the students and build up the discussion and then kind of bring the staff into those conversations, because they've got other routes into finding out some of this stuff, but when they're getting the sort of direct questions stuff, it makes a big difference. We were working with support services that included the counselling service and the careers service And so we were thinking quite strongly about those kind of student transitions and duty of care kind of issues throughout the campaign and the research. And we had some unexpected things happen. So we did some workshops for high school students on request. They were very, very interesting. We had a workshop with 160 schools, so high school students of sixth formers. We asked them what would happen if we would Google them, what would we find? And it was quite the interesting response. If I Googled you, I presume you know what you would find. Have you all Googled yourself recently? Yeah, okay. The high school students, they knew what would be found, but they all kind of, they were not so sure that I should be out Googling them, so, which I didn't, but I sort of, it was an interesting question to ask them. We've also, as I mentioned, the service has become a mainstream service in the university, and myself and Tadina were sort of trying to see if there's some opportunities to do some consulting and go to the universities and things as well. So this has had a lot more kind of legs than we expected as a project. So we created lots of resources during the project, and this is one of the resources we created for that school event. And this was an action plan for students to take away and think about how they were going to do things to improve their digital footprint over the summer, and ask them questions like, you know, if you search for yourself, what's there? Is it what you want to have there? What do you need to do to change that? What would you like to represent about yourself? Get them to sort of reflect on what's useful. Got loads of resources like this on the website, and we're trying to sort of gradually make them more openly available. And that's there's lots of stuff that's waiting to go up in the summer, stuff that's already live. That's my segue into talking about that kind of student entities in transition. The transitioning into university is a really interesting one. So I was just at session next door sort of talking about students and how some of them tactically choose to take their personal presence on social media and make it very separate from their kind of learner identity because they already have quite established personal presence, which is kind of an interesting thing. There's a big jump in terms of behaviour and expectations and what the appropriate conduct is in that transition from school to university. And so that's something we kind of want to think about in terms of support that we were giving, workshops we were giving, and asking questions around what kind of support and issues those students were facing. So our survey asked lots of questions about where things have happened that they're not comfortable with, and so we can understand where that sort of discomfort lies and where support is needed. But we were also thinking about transitioning out of university at the other end, so going into careers and professionalism. So there's kind of two halves here. There's the sort of into university and the sort of professionalism stuff. So I've got a quote here from one of our students. I think I'm a private person. I take a lot of care and time over my close friends. I'm not of the age where it's like, oh, I've got 250 friends on Facebook. It's like I don't really care about that kind of stuff. My boundaries are more set about who I allow to be my friend. If you're my friend, I'll trust that you don't put anything stupid up. I'd say it's a big thing to trust your friends to do, actually. This is an older student really starting to think about curating their presence online and what it says about them. And that has some really interesting support implications in general. So the reason I really like that quote is that person really trusts their friends to post stuff about them. I'm not sure that's totally well placed, but not because I think that person will have friends who are completely untrustworthy, but because you have this notion of the uncontrollable self. You have this idea that people post stuff about you and build your identity in their own way. So they tag photos of you, they tag comments about you, they put stuff out there that you don't have control of. And that connection between what students wish to curate and how they actually appear when you bring in other people's curation of their identity as one of their own, that's a really interesting support challenge for us. And was definitely something that was starting to come out of the research questions I'll illustrate that as well. And that's a challenge that applies to career services, counselling services, student services, personal use, the whole kind of range of support services in a university. Because when those issues do arise of someone being tagged as they don't wish to be, that can have quite big implications actually, especially in the sort of professional space, which I'll get to in a second. And we also wanted to engage students a lot in how they can create an effective online presence. So not just think about how they curate things and how they'd want to appear, but also what might be the most effective way of doing that. So again, I'm going to just sort of bring up another quote here. It's another one of our students. I suppose it's different to think when I was a teenager, it tended to be your friends with every single person you knew. If I wouldn't sit down and have a coffee with them, why are they my friends on this? And in the same way as you would in real life, eventually kind of cutting ties with that person. And again, I think this is a brilliant quote, sort of that transition for school leavers who have this whole network of people. You used to kind of leave school, you leave your network behind, you build up new connections and you choose who you bring across. And if you've already well established yourself in Facebook and social media sites, what happens then? That group of, that identity you had as a, at school is dragged across as well, and you have to start thinking about how you curate that, including how you curate your friends and start to prune them. And that, this is a student sort of speaking to that, that challenge of how you curate those things and that blurriness. So I think a kind of across the board of that, that transition into university, there are some really interesting implications for higher education and teaching in higher education. Probably kind of most prominent in our minds, of especially for the kind of real entry-level students, would be the duty of care and the issue of raising awareness about what appropriate conduct looks like, encouraging students to think about what they're doing as to pre-arrival as they're transitioning into university life. But also about a duty of care to help them transition at the other end. So if they're posting stuff as a student, will that have implications for them professionally later on? For some professions, it definitely will. Some professions treat students as to paraprofessionals, as people who are trying to gain membership of a professional body. What you post, you know, day one of your nursing degree, potentially has implications for who employs you in sort of 3, 4, 5 years' time. So we have a real duty of care to help students understand that impact. There's some risk management stuff here, which we won't go into details because that's probably about 8 other papers all on its own. But we wish to encourage people to behave in such a way that they limit the risk of their own unhappiness, let's say, and organisational risk is also limited. So we want to encourage people to undertake practices that means they are not going to have something horrible and unexpected happen simply for the reason that they haven't thought of how to change their settings or they haven't thought about what the etiquette is for space. We want to give them all the tools they possibly can to mitigate those kind of risks. Digital skills training and support is clearly part of this picture. So we were talking about social media being a part of the digital footprint. There are other spaces as well. But across both social media and other digital spaces, we need to be confident that both students and staff have the kind of skills that they need to navigate that stuff. And I know there's a lot of talk this morning in your keynote, Eric, about how there are not such things as digital natives, and all of the research is so strongly like backing that up, that people do not automatically understand technology or the implications of technology or the implications of what they're sharing simply because they happen to be younger or they happen to have used that technology for longer. So there's a real kind of issue there of making sure that the appropriate sort of skill set is in place. And it's a professional skill. It's a basic professional skill as students seeking into the workplace. I think there's been some talk already about availability and choice of platforms, but specifically in a teaching and learning context, we also have to be quite aware of the issue of international students and some of the limitations they face. So we did some lab sessions as well associated with the research, and we had a student from China explaining how they're not on, well, they are on Facebook, but they're not really supposed to be on Facebook because the government says they should not be. And his flatmate is from China, and his flatmate is not on Facebook, but the course, informally, has set up a Facebook group and all of the important sharing takes place in that space. And so his flatmate uses his Facebook to check in on the group and is at risk of being excluded by that group. And that's one of the kind of trickinesses of bringing together those the formal and informal aspects, but also thinking properly about what the implications of using these spaces are for all of our students. And our students may include quite a large quantity of international students. They may include online learners in countries where some of these sites are blocked. There is plenty of good information about which sites are blocked in which places, but there are also other reasons as well where you might have to pick different choices. So some students may not wish to join a site, even if they have access to it, even if their government is fine with having access with it, even if they can access it, they may not want to join a site, and we have to respect that as well. So there's a real interesting challenge to bring in interesting, innovative stuff into learning and teaching, but also not accidentally exclude people. And that's a tricky balancing act, and our colleagues who are already using social media and lots of learning and teaching are finding different ways of doing that. And I sort of mentioned the accessibility slide there. So talk to you about e-professionalism now, so just transition at the other end. Our definition of e-professionalism is after Chester et al, 2013. It's the way you engage yourself online in relation to your profession, including your attitudes, actions, and your adherence to relevant professional codes of conduct. And I think we kind of recognise that concept, even if we don't call it e-professionalism. It's really professionalism, but it's professionalism online, basically. And we sort of used this a lot within the campaign and within sort of our interpretation of the research as well, to understand this role of students as paraprofessionals, the importance of what you are doing as you come to the end of your studies in particular, but actually throughout your studies, in terms of what you post, in terms of what you share, and how that identity you build up is representing you, you know, your personal brand, your professional presence. So in terms of supporting students at Edinburgh during this campaign, we ran professional workshops, particularly in kind of nursing and sort of professional programmes where that was a high level of priority right from the sort of outset of a degree programme. Had professional networking workshops, and actually one of the outcomes of our research was that lots of students were looking for professional networking support, but they didn't know that LinkedIn was the space you'd do that in, and our careers service was advertising those sessions as LinkedIn sessions, and so they've changed the name of them to professional networking sessions. And now students know to sign up for them, and that LinkedIn is one of the tools they can use to do that. So that was a very useful practical outcome of our research very early on. There is some digital edge project stuff going on at our university at the moment, which is encouraging students to actually get their digital skills kind of certified and recognised and build up a sort of portfolio that shows those off in recognition of the fact that those skills are kind of key to employers. And we have put together a sort of list of professional bodies guidelines, which we knew were out there, but we thought needed to be in one helpful list. And in parallel to that, we've built a kind of e-professionalism guide so that people across different subject areas can look at how to bring in those professional bodies guidelines into their teaching and learning practice, so they can think about how to include that in their own guidelines, how they can think about how that applies to what they're doing. And that those will be, the professionalism guide will be going up very soon, and there's a case study about it already live. So I'm going to give you a couple of bits of slightly raw data, but just to give you an idea of what's going on with our students here. We asked if they'd be interested about getting workshops or information about managing a digital footprint, and what kind of topics they'd be interested in. And across our surveys, about a quarter of our students, slightly over a quarter, stated that employment opportunities and professional networking were really important to them, which was great in terms of the professionalism work, and again, impacted on that that rebranding of the career service sessions. But our students are already thinking ahead, which is excellent. And they can see that the digital footprint has a real impact on their professional identity and on their personal brand. Yes?
But that does mean that three quarters said it wasn't.
It means that three quarters aren't thinking about that so far. They haven't said no. This is part of a list of options they had for different kinds of...
The students, training. Were they in particular years or spread across the years? So you get a weighting on final year, don't you, for
Yeah,
careers?
You get a weighting on final year for this, I think. At the moment, this is across the whole set, across different cohorts. So if you bear in mind that first-year students are thinking that it's a lot less than your final-year students and a lot less than your PhD students, potentially. We haven't done the full breakdown by cohort yet of this particular question, because there are other questions we've been looking at in more depth first, but that can be done. Our data does sort of reflect that. But I think that's pretty good, actually, because it does cover the whole range of sort of different cohorts.
Yeah, sure.
And I think the fact that they weren't making that connection between sort of, yeah, professional networking and LinkedIn is a really interesting one.
Mm.
One of the questions that we thought was the kind of most interesting to ask, and we definitely got the most interesting answers to, was around whether students had experienced a whole series of different things, so including very positive things and very negative things. Take some of the kind of negative things they might have experienced online. We included bullying, harassment, unwanted comments or tags, identity theft, being hacked, those kind of questions, just to get a sense of how much risk is actually there, how much have they actually experienced, how much is that feeding into how they behave in these spaces, which I will show you some of the results from in a second. There were some things we didn't ask about, which maybe we should have done as well, which was issues, sort of disciplinary issues, revenge porn, which unhappily I think we would have had some responses to. Surveillance and monitoring, which I think is becoming increasingly a sort of issue and concern for our students. Feeling the inadequacy, public relationship breakdown. There were a whole bunch of things that as we sort of looked at the answers to the sort of how many people experience those kind of areas, we thought there are other things we might want to ask about and that come out of the sort of comments and questions around it. So we asked about peer support, these are the good things of that list. We asked about receiving peer support through social media, whether our students are receiving that. And this was, although the percentages are 15% in our first survey, 16% in our second survey, and all of these surveys, by the way, they're from a total number of 1,457 responses. That's a 15-16% of our respondents said that they'd experienced receiving peer support through social media. And that was our most popular response. So although it's not a huge percentage, it's the thing they had the most experience of, which I think speaks very well to how one might use these in learning and teaching, that they are being used in those informal peer support ways. Actually, close to 10% across the two surveys had been approached for a job or a volunteering opportunity on social media or online, which is actually, again, a really positive thing. a really good way of explaining why this is a useful thing to incorporate into teaching and learning and sport practices. And a sort of etiquette question. We had sort of just over 9% in both of our surveys who deleted a post to avoid upsetting other people. So they are self-regulating as well, which is brilliant. I think that's a really positive thing as well. And less positively, 11% in our first survey, 10% in our second survey had experienced unwanted tagging on photographs, which is quite high, although I reckon if I ask this room, have any of you been tagged in a photo you didn't want to be tagged in? Yeah, lots of nods. It's Christmas party season, so it's about to go up, I think. So it was a really interesting snapshot of what they're actually experiencing, what, rather than what we think the sort of high-risk things are, perhaps. 1 minute, okay. Shall speed through. So quickly say about how social media is being used in learning and teaching at the moment in our institution. There are many ways at the moment. The University of Edinburgh is quite up for social media, which is great. So we have things like tutorials, which are used in our MSc in Digital Education. We have Facebook study groups, and we've done this. One of my colleagues, Heather McQueen, and Claire, what's her surname?
Shields.
Thank you, Claire Shields, have been working on some research funded by the Higher Education Academy on those Facebook study groups and whether they encourage plagiarism or not, which I think will be published at some point. We've got Padlet being used in assessed places in the vet school. We have Google Hangouts in use in geosciences. We have blogging as a peer learning space and as a reflection space across quite a lot of courses, including in Divinity. So there's a lot of use already, and I think that probably sort of feeds into some of the kind of responses we've had back in terms of the positive as well as the sort of negative experiences. The other thing that we have is that there are guidance in student handbooks, in some of our student handbooks, around the use of social media in learning and teaching in their course. One of the things that we created as part of this project was an updated set of guidelines that could be used consistently across handbooks and across schools, in recognition of the fact those weren't always saying the same things, they didn't always weren't always present in the same way, so might be quite a brief note about it. So we've tried to make nice, clear guidance, and that's building upon some of the work that, that Heather did, I think, actually. Yeah. So some challenges and cautions from what we've got so far, and a lot of this is being written up, by the way, for a variety of different things at the moment. Not all students want social media spaces in a learning and teaching context. They're not always happy about doing that. It's not always appropriate to do that. If you've got a whole bunch of psychology students and you try and encourage them to have a Facebook group, that is a very inappropriate blend of kind of space with professional guidance, for instance. Not all students want or are able to engage with social media. There are issues of accessibility, but as I mentioned, also international students, also where they're accessing stuff from as well. So if you've got students who are particularly engaging on an online programme and they cannot access a particular site for reasons of bandwidth, not just for reasons of blocking, that can be an issue. There is some sort of use of social media assessment already at our university, but there is a real challenge there around the ephemeral nature of the spaces and around the terms and conditions versus your requirement to capture things. I think the one that's kind of most prominent in my mind at the moment is the sort of relatively recent Twitter change that says that if someone deletes a tweet, you should also delete it, no matter where else you put it. Which is quite an interesting challenge from the point of view of doing anything that might be assessed that might involve a collection of tweets, for instance. Theoretically, the guidelines say that, you know, some provisions say you should be deleting stuff that's been deleted. But screen capture is mentioned as well in the keynote today of Snapchat, that sort of thing. And we need support for staff, and that's something we recognised during the campaign, even though our main focus was on the students, because the students will look to the staff for support, and the staff will want to follow the students in some of the spaces as well. So there needs to be that kind of proper dialogue back and forth, as there obviously is on the ground. So our conclusions at this point, at least, we really shouldn't make assumptions about what students are doing with social media. We gave you a tiny little snapshot of the data from our survey, but across that very large cohort of students responding, a lot of whom are not super privacy obsessed, you know, some of our labs attracted much more privacy obsessed people, but the survey was a real wide range. They're thoughtful, they're curating, they're thinking about what they do, so we can't make assumptions about what they're doing being particularly, you know, particularly dark. They might be making a perfectly sensible decision to actually be very open and very transparent in their postings, even if we're not comfortable with it as well. So there's a real need to actually kind of ask and find out. We need to be really confident we can support students and staff with their digital skills and the use of social media, particularly around those transition times, particularly around their online presence and building that up, particularly about thinking about the long-term impact of stuff they're posting, but also being aware that etiquette is changing and there are different sort of social norms across some of these people. Online identity creation is really complex. I mean, if this was a much longer paper, then I'd talk about sort of you know, work that David Boyd's done, work that David Breaker's done around this stuff. We'll go into a lot more detail about that in some forthcoming research outputs. And you need to change the stuff really regularly, which is a challenge for our support services at least, because the space has changed, the practices change very regularly as well.